You're listening to Trek FM.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
There was a little bar in Mill Valley where all the Starfleet trainees used to go.
The 602 Club.
You know it.
I was there more times than I can remember.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the 602 Club. We got a great supplemental for you this weekend. I'm excited to be coming to you from wild space. Hopefully, the transmission is coming in loud and clear. We're beaming through Lothal, so hopefully you can pick us up. We got Star Wars Celebration coming up this week as we record, and I thought it would be fun to get together with a good Star Wars buddy and talk about some very random things, things you might not expect us to actually cover, but we're going to do it. And with me, to help me do that, is the one and only Mr. Scott Rifen. How are you doing, Scott?
I'm terrific. Let's explain the reason I'm the one and only is because if there were two of me, there would be big trouble.
That's true. I think universe ending explosion is actually what happens. So
yeah, could be. So let's not take that chance.
No, let's not. Let's not. Well, we're going to cover the Adventures in Wild Space books. We're going to cover the prologue and then book one and two. And the reason we're doing that is, and not doing more of them, is those are the ones that have come out so far in the U.S. digitally. I was looking today that the third book and maybe some of the others will be coming out in April on, I think, the 11th, I saw, was the rumored release date of The Nest, and hopefully some of the others. So, I would like them to, because I had a good time reading these. And before we dive into that, just remember you can find all the shows on Trek FM here on iTunes at itunes.com/TrekFM. We're a featured provider there. And, we're talking about Star Wars specifically tonight, remember that the Star Wars 602 Club Collection, we're running a special promo right now because of a snafu on iTunes. We lost all of our reviews and had to reload. Yeah. So, yeah, no fun. But it gave us the opportunity to run a contest for everyone. If you give us a star rating and give us a review, because we need that review, we're giving away two copies of Rogue One when it comes out. So make sure that you get your review in, and we'll pick a couple names out of hats, and they'll be the lucky winners of a brand new copy of Rogue One on Blu-ray. So, and it'll be one that comes with the DVD and the digital copy. So you'll have three different copies of that film. That's what we're doing. So go over there, do that. You can find us on Twitter at Trek FM, Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. And of course, we have our listeners only discussion group, the Babel Conference on Facebook. And the best way to get to that is just go to Facebook, type Babel into the search field. Or if you're on our website at trek.fm, you can hit discussion on any of the show pages, and that'll bring you to the group. And so, Scott, this is a fun series and an interesting series, because it's, I think, the only series right now that actually started in the UK and then was released in the US.
Yeah. In fact, I got so scared that I wasn't going to be able to get this. I'm, a little bit of a Star Wars bibliophile, as many people know by now. And so I love the books. I love to get the books. And I watched this series come out little by little in England, little by little. And I kept going, where's ours? Where's ours? So finally, I gave up and started ordering them on Amazon, used copies from the UK. So, and just about the time I got about 2/3 of the series done, they said, oh yeah, by the way, we're putting them out in America, which is about the way things go for me.
Yeah. Well, and it was kind of a strange marketing system, because, and I don't know if maybe they just thought, let's just try it over here and see if it works. But, when it's all canon and it all seems to matter these days with Star Wars, it was strange that you would release it one place and not another place.
Yeah. And there's nothing uniquely British about them as far as the flavor or what takes place in them. So I don't know why England was the first place to get these things, but I am glad they made their way over here. Although I've got to tell you, I have to profess a little more fondness for the UK editions than the US editions.
They have, I think, better covers because the artwork on the cover actually matches the artwork in the book, whereas the U.S. artwork is, it's okay, but I don't think, you know, these are, let's be honest, these are middle grade kids books. Yeah. And I feel like the UK covers actually would capture more kids' imaginations.
Yeah, they're a little more imaginative. They're a little more descriptive of what actually happens in the book. The U.S. covers are a little bit on the abstract side, actually.
Yes, yes.
And even the logo, the Adventures in Wild Space logo, I prefer the British version of that to the U.S. version of it. And the books, honestly, they're a little softer paper, they're a little thicker book, and they're a little easier to hold.
Well, what's fun about those U.K. editions as well is that logo reminds me of, it's like kind of like a cross between a Clone Wars logo and you know, like a Star Wars logo in general. And so it's kind of fun to have that be the logo in this in-between time. Like, I just speaking as a ridiculous Star Wars geeks as we all are as we're listening to this, you know, we're getting into logos because that means something to us as Star Wars fans. So I absolutely agree with you that those are, I think, the better copies. The series is right now written by two different authors. You have Kaven Scott, and the other author is Tom Huddleston. So it's not Tom Hiddleston, no. Ladies. You don't get excited. He's not writing Star Wars books.
Not yet.
Yeah, not yet. I mean, who knows? But the series really is set up this way. It's the end of the Clone Wars, the destruction of the Jedi, and Palpatine has taken over the galaxy unopposed. But far away from that, in, you know, these unknown regions of wild space, Milo and Lena Graff and their parents are explorers. It's a little Star Trek-ish in some ways. Like, they're mappers, and so they map worlds and planet systems and I'm sure hyperspace lanes to further their exploration of the galaxy here in Star Wars. And it's a fun way to start this story, and I think the setup, because, you know, you're in this in-between time between the two films, but setting it this way allows you to do a lot of things where you can play around in the universe, but you're not necessarily worried about messing up other people's sandboxes because you're on the outer rim or wild space. I mean, you're beyond the outer rim.
And it's interesting too, to note that the kids at the beginning of this, and it's a very un-Star Wars like thing, or at least something we're not used to. At the beginning of the stories, the kids are fans of the Empire. They support the Empire. They believe, they've been raised with the notion that the Empire does good things for good people. And of course, that slowly crumbles over the course of the setup to the series. But you don't see that perspective portrayed a lot, though you have to think at some point that was a prevalent thought amongst people in the galaxy.
Yeah, one of the things that I really like about the way the series starts, and there's a prelude book, it's called The Escape, and it opens up the series. And it's funny because, as we were talking about before the show, you can't find that one in paperback in the U.S., which is kind of strange because it's really important. I mean, you can get it digitally, which is great because it actually sets up the entire story. But you're absolutely right. One of the things that was so interesting about this was seeing the perspective that I think the only place we've really seen it otherwise is in Lost Stars, where the kids are, you know, fans of the Empire because they think it's going to be a good thing. In fact, Milo has a conversation with his dad, and it's like a kind of like a little flashback scene of them talking about the Empire, and him saying he thinks it's going to be good for them. It's going to be good for business. You know, they're going to want to come out and explore, and then they're going to want, you know, what we got. So, you know, it's a very interesting perspective to get to see people who would be excited for and be willing to work with the Empire. And I guess now that I'm thinking about it, Scott, Catalyst has a little bit of that.
Yes. Yeah, it does have a little bit of that, but at the same time, you kind of know where Catalyst is going to go with it. And this one, I wasn't really sure at first because they just did seem so bent on supporting the Empire. Mm-hmm. But of course, they're given your standard requisite ugly Imperial villain to deal with, and that changes everything for them.
Right. No, exactly. It, you know, they're on this kind of swamp world. Their parents are doing their work cartography-wise. It's also interesting that her parents, especially her dad, has been teaching her little brother. The little brother there, Lobro, as his older sister likes to call him, to, you know, be somebody who enjoys biology and understanding the universe. And so, again, it reminds it. Scott, did you ever watch Star Trek Voyager?
Yes, early on, okay. I did, yes.
When Seven of Nine came on, her parents had been explorers that were studying the Borg, and they were out there by themselves on their own ship, and that's kind of what this felt like a little bit to me. You know, they're out there on the edge doing their thing with their kids and, like, kind of raising them away from everything. But they're smart kids, and they're learning a lot, and... you know, they're not encumbered by anything else really in the universe. I mean, they're just out there to explore. And again, it felt kind of Star Trek-y, but not in a bad way. Like, it was kind of neat to see a Star Wars story, I felt like, start in a way that people were enjoying the galaxy they were in.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen a lot in Star Wars.
No. And again, people were content with their status in life at the beginning of this thing as well, before it all came crashing down. One of the other interesting things, I think, is that you have the parents have certain roles, and those roles seem to be passed down to the children, whereas, as you say, Milo's the biologist. He wants to be out there in the swamp, digging around, looking for species. And his sister, Alina, is very much a mechanic. She's very much the one who can fix the ship. She's very much the one who can, rebuild an engine if she needs to. She's the one who can help diagnose the problems with the hyperdrive if necessary. And so they both got their distinct sets of personalities and skill sets, and they're very close to each other in age. They're only, as I understand, a year apart from each other. So it does give a really good dynamic, him being the little brother, a little more mischievous, she's got to watch out for him and look out for him a little more. Really good dynamic amongst these two characters.
Yeah, no, I think it's, for a children's book, you know, I don't really feel like the story writes down to anyone, you know, so as an adult reading it, obviously it's a quick story and there's not a ton of depth to it, but I didn't feel like it, I don't know, I just didn't feel like dumbed down at all.
No.
Big time.
And I feel like there's been a need for this kind of literature in Star Wars. As I mentioned earlier, I buy lots and lots and lots of Star Wars books, and there seems like there's been there's been a lot of talk since New Canon started about, you know, like Lost Stars, as you mentioned earlier, where they've decided to go into that teen area of novel, and there've been the junior novels, but these are even younger, and it is an area where I think, you know, elementary school kids could really take a bite out of this and be proud that they finished a book like this. You know, I remember being in fifth grade and getting Don Glut's adaptation of The Empire Strikes Back and working my way through that and really feeling like I'd accomplished something at the end of it, but it took a while. I think kids a couple of years younger than that, third, fourth grade, I think those kids could get these things, absorb them, and really feel like they've achieved something, and it really seems to serve them in that age range. And again, that's kind of been ignored for a while to me.
No, I think you're absolutely right, and I think it's what's fun about it too. And Star Wars does a much better job of this than, say, like a Star Trek, where it introduces the kids to the material as young people, you know. And I think this is absolutely a great thing, you know, whether or not the kid is allowed to be able to sit down and be able to read these themselves, or whether it's something where it's, story time with the parents, or, you know, I think these are perfect for that. But they're also just fun, very quick reads, I think, for adults. And what it felt like to me, all three of these, especially here, you know, we started off with this little prelude, The Escape. It actually felt like episodes of the animated shows. So, like, the arcs you'd get, like, especially in the Clone Wars, where it'd be a four-part arc, and this felt like just each book is one of those parts, and because all the stories are very connected in that way, and they're an adventure, and then you kind of hop to the next thing, and it's really successful in that way. I think it works perfectly.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a cliffhanger at the end of every one that sets up the next book, which is great, because I happen to have the next two that haven't been released right here. So
what I love is, you know, that in the escape, that the kid's little bro is gotten in trouble because he's crashed his speeder, and it's because he's been chasing after animals, and his sister goes after him, and with their droid CR-8R, or they call him Cutter, and Crater. And yeah. Which the droid himself was actually pretty funny too. Great. He's got it's like a probe droid flying body thing with an astromech body, and then the head of like a protocol droid, but kind of like a Huang protocol droid. So yeah, it's rarely.
And one arm, different arm on the other side.
It's great.
Yeah. Personality-wise, it's funny because these books are a little older since they came out in the UK first. Personality-wise, he very much strikes me as a K2SO type, and yet there really was no K2SO when they wrote these books.
Yeah, he has a great sarcastic edge to him, which is fantastic, that I really love. And I also like how they're talking about how when they're going back home and like, oh, after Dad yells at us, of course. And it struck me as Leave It to Beaver. When you remember that, when he'd be like, oh, Dad'll holler at us and stuff. Ward Cleaver never yelled at his children. I get the feeling like their parents never yell at them, but it's just something that they're afraid of.
We'll know. We'll find out. Hopefully we'll find out in
that's
time.
That's true. We'll hopefully find out, because the whole beginning of this story is that the Empire lands on this planet, and they want the information that the Graphs have been collecting about wild space. And they've actually sent a very interesting villain who really reminded me of another villain that we've seen in KOTOR, Malik. Because he has the metal chin.
Yeah.
And I was like, very Malik of him.
I was thinking Masters of the Universe and Trapjaw.
There you go. I mean, it's very much in those two veins. And so, this Captain Korda has been sent by Vader to get the information, and he kidnaps the parents and then thinks he blows up their ship and the kids. So this guy's really bad news.
Exactly. And when he does obviously find out that he got neither the ship nor the kids, he goes chasing after them. And there's some great chase scenes involving a boat in one of them, and a TIE fighter chasing after the boat, and a lot of fun stuff. And I'll say again, for parents who are listening going, is this for my kids? And you hear TIE fighters are chasing and all of that. The TIE fighter even blows up in one point, but they do make sure to let you know that the pilot didn't get killed when it blew up. He survives and continues to try to menace them. So there's some superficial violence in this, even though there's some, Cord is a very nasty guy. But the violence is not excessive or over the top.
It reminds me very much of, again, what you would see in a Rebels episode or in a Clone Wars episode, and probably not as dark as some of the dark episodes of the Clone Wars, like Umbara or something like that. So it's definitely much more Rebels style violence.
You talk again, we were talking earlier about, second or third graders being able to handle this material. And I think a lot of them could, some of them maybe not, as far as, their reading ability, but it does harken back to me to when I was 6 years old when Star Wars came out, the first film. And I remember how much I enjoyed it, and how into it I was, but how really, when you look at it violence wise, what really is there? Guys in armor get shot. You never see the actual, and you don't see any results of their being shot other than they fall down. Even when the big lightsaber battle happens, nobody's actually ever hit because Kenobi disappears before he gets hit. So, the violence level to me is very reminiscent of that original Star Wars film, where if anybody is even close to, you really see real, with the exception of, Aunt Beru and Uncle Owen, that kind of thing, or the cantina scene.
Yeah.
But it's very... It's there because it's part of what they do, and of course it's part of the situations they're in, but when it rolls around, it doesn't come across as something that's a bad kind of violence for kids to have to endure. It's not anything that's damaging to them. So again, I would recommend kids get this as kind of an entree to the universe.
Well, and you know, it's interesting to watch the kid's journey, because here, especially by the end of the first book, they are having this whole conversation as they're making their escape and heading to Thune to look for their parents' partner so they can try and catch up and figure out what's going on and hopefully find some safety. They have this wonderful little conversation, and Milo says, so it's the Graf kids against the Empire, eh? And Lena watched the coordinates scroll across the monitor, and it says, looks like it. And here I was thinking the Imperials were the good guys. And what I like about what the story does, and specifically kind of talking about it from the standpoint of, like, if I was a parent, you know, this is a great way of being able to talk about some larger things with your kids, you know, like that not everybody in power is always a good person, you know, and those kind of issues. And I think, you know, one of the beauties of Star Wars is the way that it has those morals, meanings, and messages that are kind of universal, and parents can help impart to their kids and give them a way to talk about things like that. And I think this series really does it. And what was interesting to me here, Scott, is in The Snare, the second book, we find out as the kids travel to Thune and they're being pursued by Captain Korda, we find out that Vader has specifically sent Korda to get this information from the Grafs, which led me to a question then about Empire's End and Aftermath and what we learned about Palpatine creating the contingency plan, because he felt this dark presence beyond the galaxy, and his first step was in getting information about Wild Space and beyond. And we learned that part of the information that he got from Wild Space came from Thrawn, but I'm wondering if this is actually that first step in that plan, that he's using people like this to get that information about, you know, places that haven't been explored yet, and then of course going beyond that. So that could be a reach, but
no, actually that sounds very, it sounds very plausible, especially, I mean, considering it's the theme of it. And what's interesting is, and you don't see a lot of this to me in a lot of just Imperial era Star Wars, is that the Grafs are out there doing this, and then their plan is, once they get everything mapped, their plan is to sell that data.
Right, right.
You know, that's what they're going to do. And you don't see a lot of that in, you know, mid-Empire Star Wars literature or stories, comics, any of that, where people are actually doing business and happily doing business. And so that's their plan, is to go gather this information and sell it. The Empire suddenly, once they amass a large amount of this information, decides they have other plans for that information, and selling it is not going to be item number one. But again, that could also, to me, speak to one of the themes of these stories is, you know, you don't have the freedom to pursue what you want to pursue. You don't have the freedom to pursue your career per se, unless it is directly in the service of the Emperor. And that's how the Graf family finds out the hard way.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And it creates this, this great story, and a little side story, and especially, for kids who might be not old enough at this kind of point to see like a Rogue One or something like that, you know, this kind of sets them up for that story, though, because they see the corruptive influence of the Empire and the power that it has, and that this absolute power is corrupting absolutely. And, you know, Korda even says, I could do whatever I want, you know, because I'm the Empire, you know, and
yeah,
the kids are learning this. And of course, he's not afraid to say that kind of thing to them, because there's no worry for him. And I think that that's a really fun thing to see. And even for me, as an adult Star Wars fan, it's fun to have that experience of watching the galaxy go from a place that a lot of it celebrated the Empire coming, look how liberty dies, to thunderous applause. But then people realizing what had actually taken place, because then they begin to experience the oppression of the Empire. And I think that's what we're getting in this story. And that's actually pretty cool to get that in a kid's book.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But, you know, also heretofore in Star Wars, during the Imperial era, when we've seen people who are business people, will say, people who are operating to go out and make a little money doing what they do, generally they're con men, they're smugglers, they're pirates, they're not on the up and up. And that's kind of what we always think of with somebody who's got a, you know, I don't want to say a profit motive in mind, but obviously, again, the plan of the Graff family was to sell this data.
He's no good to me, dude.
Yeah. You see the bounty hunters. You see the underworld. That's who actually goes and engages in business. But at some point, obviously, that wasn't the case in the Empire, or these folks wouldn't have been out there doing what they were doing. And it seems like maybe this is coming at a point where the Empire is starting to crack down on people's independent business operations and that kind of thing, and making it so that the only economy really is the underworld economy.
What's great here too, and I have to say, I think that Kevin Scott actually really got the Vader dialogue, because there's just a little bit of dialogue there, but it's short, crisp, and to the point. And he's Korda answers the call from Vader, and Vader's like, "You can tell me that you have those maps." And he's like, "Well, we'll soon have them. We're all fine here, basically." And then he's talking about how, but the children, and then Vader says, "Children.
Yeah, children.
You're being evaded by children." Like, it's just odd. It's a great conversation. Oh, man, I loved it.
I love it. Yep, absolutely.
What's fun too, so again, we were talking about how these books are connected. You know, in the snare, they go to meet their parents' partner, Dil Pexton, who is a Zolistan, and Zolistan has sold them out, basically the same way that Lando sold out, you know, Han and Leia, and
exactly
City.
The same way, yeah.
And because he's being threatened, and I mean, you know, you can understand in some ways. So the kids have to do everything they can to get away. And like you said, there's a great chase scene on a boat and with TIE fighters, and they finally get off this awful planet. Like, it's an interesting planet too. It's one with, it sounded like a whole planet that's like Venice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was kind of cool. Like, very cool thought that you had a whole planet kind of like Venice. And they get away, and they're trying to figure out where to go next, and they hear what they think is a rebel transmission.
Yep.
And they're like, "Oh, so if somebody's like against the Empire, maybe they can help us." And then the nest leads us to where they go to they trace that rebel transmission to a planet, and they land, and it's definitely not what they expected.
No, not in the slightest. And their hyperdrive breaks on the way over there, which, you know, has anybody developed a reliable hyperdrive at this point in the Star Wars galaxy?
You know,
they tend to go out a lot.
They do. Although I do have to say, these kids have kind of been through the loop. One of the fun things is that each of the books has pictures in it, and which is really cool, because, you know, a lot of times in Star Wars books, and look, I'm a huge fan, but I'm not one of those people who could tell you what the name and number of all this different Star Wars ships or guns or even aliens is. So what's great about these books is they have pictures in there to give you a reference of what the kids look like, what the ships look like, that kind of stuff. And the fun thing is their ship, it kind of looks a little bit like an Imperial Tyderium class ship.
Yep.
But it doesn't have the triangular top to it, and the wings go flat. They don't kind of do the diagonal downward look.
Yeah, and it doesn't have the big fin on the top, but also the wings are armed.
Yes, yes.
There's weaponry on the arms as well, which are the wings as well, which gives them some opportunity sometimes for self-defense.
Yes, I think they call them like a mining laser, so that, I mean, it's meant for other things other than defense, but it of course still gets used that way. So
yes.
But I do think this is really interesting. Is so in the first book, their parents, as they're getting stolen, send encrypted data to Crater. And this data allows him to be able to have all of these false identities for the ship that they have, which is kind of great. But The most interesting part, and this is one of the fun things that's running through the series so far in these first three books that we're talking about, what did he give them that's so important? And obviously, he kind of has, in a lot of ways, he's the R2 where he's carrying the data, and but they don't even know what it is yet.
And part of this is that they basically sent a very low-level encrypted signal to him, and it's and because it is so low level and he is so advanced, it's actually taking him extra time to process it. So as the book, the first book goes on, he's only got a fraction of it processed. Fortunately, it was enough to get them the fake identity for their ship, but obviously this is going to become a thing as the books progress, is that he's continually discovering things that were sent to him in this data download. And he's having to process more and more and more of it.
It's kind of like how in Legends, R2 started learning more and more and more about Padme and those kind of things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that. Good point.
But so what's fun about this is that it combines some interesting aspects of like the Clone Wars, where the planet that Ahsoka was stolen to and the Trandoshans are hunting people and different things, they land on a planet that's owned by a hunter. Like nobody else, I mean, we're in wild space. There's nobody else out here. And this planet, she has a bunch of things that she hunts. What's interesting is they end up in the midst of a hunt that they probably don't want to be a part of. And that's pretty much the whole story here, because until the very end is really them basically finding out they should never have landed on this planet at all.
Yeah, if they were tracking down the source of that transmission, it didn't quite work out for them. But the hunt very much reminds me, though, of the Rathtar chase in The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Very dangerous animals being hunted. The crew, remember, Solo says in The Force Awakens had a lot bigger crew.
Yeah.
And the crew gets taken out by some of these animals as well as they are on the planet's surface. And so this hunter, she has some interesting and unique tools where she has, I guess, a helmet that amplifies her ability to smell and to see and to hear so that it aids her in hunting. But she's also someone who doesn't. And I, one of the things that flashed through my head, and maybe it will through yours, remember the big hullabaloo on the internet last year when people were going to Africa and they were going to these big game safaris where they were set up to go kill, you know, a lion or whatever animal. Yep. And this hunter says, you know, they have that. I don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
I want real hunting. I want to really track these animals down and really take them out, really best them.
Yep.
Whereas with these set up places, and again, I think of the places in Africa where they do this, they're really just setting them up to be killed by you. And that's it. It's not very sporting, obviously.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, it takes no skill really to shoot an animal that's in an area which it can't get away from. There's no chase. There's no actual hunt. There's no skill involved. It's, I mean, other than you knowing how to use a gun, you know, so, but that's, you know, hunting in and of itself is such a, I mean, and I know a lot of hunters. I grew up in Dallas, Texas, and a lot of my friends were big hunters and they really enjoy it. There are also people who eat the meat of what they kill, so they're not just doing it for sport. But the whole process of being able to spend out time outdoors, of, you know, tracking whatever they're, you know, hunting and all that kind of stuff, it's a skill, you know? So yeah, absolutely. That was really interesting and kind of a lot of fun to see in the Star Wars universe, this whole idea. And what was fun about this whole series so far is that it's kind of expanding what Star Wars is, you know, like that. And to me, that's exactly what Clone Wars did so well for the Star Wars universe. And that's what George was always about, of being able to find a way to expand the Star Wars universe. If I can say anything about these books in praise, and I will, they feel like Clone Wars episodes because each book kind of has a distinct flavor to it, the way the Clone Wars would. Well, we're going to do a Godzilla arc, and then we're going to do a Noir arc, and then we're going to do, you know, they would... Yep. This very much feels in that framework, and they are doing a very good job of creating the serial feel from the 30s with this story since, and kind of giving kids almost their own serials in that way.
Yeah, and I think the pacing's interesting because I always, when I've gotten in the middle of these books and I've wondered how, you know, and I though I have the physical copies, I did read them on the Kindle. And so you're looking at that percentage tracker go by as you're reading it, and you're going, how in the world are they going to get from here to where they need to be in the by the time this book is over? Because it's just flying by. And they always manage to not only do it, but to do it in a way that is exciting and action-packed and adventurous. I'm amazed at the pacing of these things. I really am.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. You know, one of the fun parts about, and I've read a lot of tie-in fiction, Star Wars and Star Trek, and Star Trek does some ebooks as well that mm-hmm. are just specifically ebooks. And what's great about those is I think sometimes the limited page count helps the authors to come up with stories that are quick and to the point without a lot of extraneous material or feeling like they have to have extraneous material. Mm-hmm. And that happens so well in these books with these stories because each one is to the point about what this story is going to be about. And it's not necessarily worrying too much about the next story. But then here, like, say, in The Nest, by the very end, they drop a huge part of where you're going to go in the next book, and it's a huge connection for us.
It is. You know, it's funny, though, you talk about the amount of time spent in these stories. I have a friend who is a Nebula Award-winning author, and I was talking to him about a story I had written and that I was thinking about submitting for publication. And the first thing he said to me, not even about the content, not even about the style, not about the story, was, what's your word count? And when I told him, he's like, well, you know, that's probably about 80,000 words too short for what they want. And I thought, well, but that's the story I told. And so if it's the story I told, why would we, you know, puff it up with stuff that obviously doesn't belong there? And that is what happens a lot of the time with a lot of these books is there's sometimes, you know, I can remember, you know, if I can name names, I think the Corellia trilogy plainly seemed to be given life as one book and became three. And it showed because I think they still had one book's worth of plot and expanded it into three books worth of words. And, you know, that what's nice about these is that they don't seem to be really, they seem to be, let's get in here. Let's do what we've got to do. Let's tell the story we've got to tell. And then let's get out and not worry about anything extra. And it would be refreshing to see more fiction, more adult fiction be like that.
Well, and I mean, gosh, specifically, the Aftermath trilogy would have been helped with more focus like this, specifically. So no, but
or complete,
you know,
sentences as they
well,
have
and it's books. It's funny because we were saying the same thing. We just talked about Iron Fist on a different supplemental here on the show, and we were mentioning how that struggled with pacing in that series. So it even happens on TV and film. I mean, really the. Pacing is such a huge issue, and if you get that wrong, it can still be good, but it might not be as good.
Well, to me, even Jessica Jones suffered from that. I mean, if we're going to step off into the Netflix stuff, I think Jessica Jones was a terrific series. I think most people agree, but right around episode 7 to about 11, it seemed like mm-hmm. they were really just marking Absolutely. Time because they said, we've got to fill 13 episodes and not we've got to tell our story.
Well,
I think they'd be better off telling their story and then going, okay, look mm-hmm. how many episodes it fits into yep. rather than saying we've got a 13 episode commitment,
Absolutely.
Especially on something like Netflix where
yeah.
you don't have to fill up 13 weeks of programming.
Absolutely. Well, and what's great, and again, I think this series specifically here so far with what we've read, they do such a great job of knowing what their audience is. They do such a great job of understanding the story structure and how it needs to work, and they just tell a great story in that structure. And, you know, each one of these books, too, shuffles a little bit with page count. Some of them will be a little bit longer, some will be a little bit shorter. But that's great because it means that they're just allowing the author to tell the story that they need to tell here
Yes.
and give them the space to do that. I mean, there's probably... I'm sure there's some word count, you know, you need, but it's worked so far. And I think one of the fun things is that, you know, the Nest really sets us up because we find out that these transmissions were only being rebroadcast from this planet that we were at. Where they're really coming from, where the source of them is Lothal. And yep. You know, when I saw that, because I'm honestly, you know, there's barely any write up for these books on Wikipedia. There's not a lot of information out there, so I'm just went into these blind. I thought I you know, I saw them on iBooks one day. I was like, heck, there's new Star Wars books. Got to read them. It's all connected. Yep. You know, they suckered me. Just take my money. And I had no idea that this would have any kind of connection, maybe with the Rebels series. So now I can't wait to dive into the rest of the series. The rest of the series looks like this. So we talked about tonight the escape, the snare, and the nest. And the rest of the books are the steal,
which is actually going to be called the heist in America.
Interesting. The heist, okay. Yeah. The dark, the cold, and then the rescue. And so, yeah, I'm actually really excited to see where this goes next and who we meet up with on Lothal. I mean, are we going to meet up with our rebels? I don't know. So
we've got friends there, don't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, we do have friends there. So this has been super fun, and I cannot believe that what amounted to probably, if you had actual page count and like an adult size font, was probably like 120 pages, 130 pages. We talked about it for 45 minutes. So, I mean, that's the kind of fun here. If you were going to throw, for these first three, what would you rate them, Scott? I was thinking we could do an adult rating, and then thinking in mind specifically for kids, where do you think you'd go?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Now, what's our scale here?
Let's do out of 10 for both. And like, so if you're an adult putting, what would you rate them? And then if you're thinking specifically as like what you would, if you had kids, what you would think they might
think. I think I would give them an 8 for adults, because one of the big reasons is because they're good Star Wars stories and they're quick. So regardless of what you think about them, I mean, look, I told you before we got started, I got wrapped up in that George Lucas biography. I fell behind in my reading of these, and I got the three books we covered read in 2 days. And it was not, you know, that wasn't burning it. That was still with me going out and running errands and doing everything I needed to do and just reading in my reading time. And I got the three books taken care of in 2 days. So it's a quick read for adults, and it's a good Star Wars story. I think you bump it up a notch for the kids, because the kids are the main characters. They can identify with them. And I think you give it a 9 for the kids.
No, I think I'm actually right there with you. I think, for me, it's 7.5 for adults, and it's 9 for the kids. And you know, for the adults, I would say the one plus here that's great is we were just talking about, is that they're short. So you know what? If you have a commute and you just want to have something kind of fun and light to read, it's great. You know, we may be surprised in where this leads us with these characters. And you know, look, maybe they'll never have any impact, right? But to me, it was fun to be in the Star Wars galaxy in a place where I didn't expect there to be any kind of connection with characters that I knew or, you know, anything like that. And they're slowly giving that to me. And so that surprise really got me going with this series. And now I'm excited to actually continue it. And like you said, you know, you can sit down and read one of these stories in probably about 45 minutes at the most.
Yeah.
So
it's not bad at all. And again, like I said, in reading it on the Kindle, you just watch those percentages just fly by and you're going, really? I'm there? That's it? That quickly? But it does happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. So I'm excited to continue this. As you're listening to this, we'll be heading off to Star Wars Celebration, both Scott and I. So
yes,
try and find us. This is in, if you're listening to this in the future, doesn't matter. As of 2017 here, make sure to look for us. And I'm really excited to do that with everyone. And, you know, I want to say a huge thank you. We get to do these shows here on the 602 Club because of our associate producers through Patreon, Ken Tripp and Davis Grayson. They make it possible, and so does everybody else who supports us through Patreon. It's a huge network that we have here, and there's no way that we can do it on our own, and we really need your help. So we encourage you to go over there to patreon.com/trekfm and check out the ways in which you can support the network and make sure that we come to you each and every week. Again, that's patreon.com/trekfm.
I got one more thing for you. I've been flipping through the heist here.
Oh, yeah?
I got two words for you. Visago.
Oh.
And Bridger.
Oh, that's a great, there you go. Well, I know I'm going to be excited, Scott, one, to have you back here to talk more of this series, because I think we definitely need to follow up on it and see where the rest of it goes. But of course, just to have you back in general. If anybody's looking for you, wants to talk about anything Star Wars related or anything else, tell them all about what you do online and where they can hit you up.
Right now I'm hiding. That's I'm just hiding. No, obviously my Star Wars story, brand new episode as we record with Dr. Amy H. Sturgis telling her Star Wars story. One day we're going to have Matthew Rushing's Star Wars story. And if it is at mystarwarsstory.com, it's also on Twitter at mystarwarsstory. And you can find me at Rifen on Twitter and Facebook. And you know, if you want some bare knuckles brawling morning talk show stuff, I can be found weekdays 7 to 10 Eastern on 1440 WGIG, which is available all around the world on the iHeartRadio app.
Awesome, which everybody should be checking out if you want a good morning listen. Want to thank you for coming on, Scott. It was super fun to do this. And
always.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing you at Celebration. Now, if you're looking for me, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. I'm on Instagram at MRushing. You want to follow those places if you want some fun Star Wars Celebration updates. It's my first time, so I'm going to be blogging about it and stuff, just kind of what my experience is like. So you can kind of live vicarious through me if you don't get to. So you can watch the live feed, and then you can get the daily blog about what that was like. You can also find me, of course, here on the network doing The Orb with Chris Jones, talking about Deep Space Nine, 602 Club, and Star Wars 602 Club Collection. All of those are on iTunes. You can find me on the Nerd Party Network talking about Star Wars with my good friend John Mills. And it's a blast every week. You know, if you like Star Wars, it's the perfect show for you. We're diving into every little bit of Star Wars we can. We come up with some crazy topics sometimes, some serious ones, and then just some silly. You know, it's all over the place. And then the last but not least, talking about the Harry Potter series with Drea Kaufman on Owl Post, a Harry Potter podcast. And that, we walk through every single chapter of Harry Potter, one chapter at a time. So we're almost done with the first book, and we're excited to be getting onto the second book soon, and I hope you'll check it out. It's the perfect time to join. If you've never read the books, or if you've read them a million times, we're there for both types of fans. So, well, thank you so much for joining us, and may the Force be with you.